Let's talk to interesting people. Let's talk about the process of seeing things differently. Let's talk about the craft of molding truth and fiction together to arrive at something new and exciting. And let's have fun while doing it. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast.
Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, the place where we dive deep into the minds of incredibly talented and creative individuals and try to unravel the mysteries behind their inspirations. I'm your host, Patrick Boggs, and joining me on this fantastic journey this evening is the co-host of True Fiction, the magnanimous Marshall. Marshall, how's it going tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Norbert is on assignment, which that's how he do it sometimes, which is fine. But he's going to miss out talking to our great guest tonight. Tonight, our guest is an author with her second book out. True Fiction welcomes Lena Harper to the show. How's it going tonight, Lena?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. So glad you could join us. I want to talk about a lot of stuff, but first I want to start out with, let's start out with your newest book, Sinister Sort, a community college mystery. And this is the number one. I'm expecting that there's going to be more.
Yes. So I have the second one already written. The third one's about halfway through the first draft, and I have outlines for numbers 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Wow.
Hopefully I can follow through.
Now, does this keep following the same college or the same people, or is it different people, or how is that?
It does. So it's a cozy mystery, and cozy mysteries, the easiest thing to compare them to for people who aren't familiar with the genre is the show Murder, She Wrote. And it's important to keep that as a context, because one of the things that people say about cozy mysteries is, okay, these stories are set in a small town where it's like a Hallmark movie, and yet somebody's getting killed all the time. And they call that the Cabot Cove syndrome. When Jessica Fletcher moved to Cabot Cove, Maine, nobody had been murdered there in 100 years. And then all of a sudden she moves in and somebody's dying every week. And so that's one of the areas where you have to suspend disbelief, especially considering that some of the cozy mystery series will go 30, 35 books. And here's this tiny little town where people are just getting slaughtered by the set in the fictional town of East Syracuse, Indiana, which is not necessarily really based on any particular town, but I use Crawfordsville a little bit as a model because they have a small college campus there in Crawfordsville, small town with a college campus. Having spent a lot of years working at Ivy Tech, it's a community college like that of East Syracuse, but in my fictional world, it's very different. It's a residential campus, more like a Wabash College in Crawfordsville or something along those lines.
At this college, are there student dorms or student housing?
I haven't really talked about that. I don't really talk about that in the first book, but in my mind's eye, there is. And the apartment where Miranda, my main character, where she lives, was formerly a hotel that catered to visiting parents and faculty, visiting faculty, things like that. So I talk in great detail about that. I kind of envision there not being a lot of residential facilities there, but at least some that would be similar in nature, probably built in the 50s or 60s. It's not a fancy campus. It's very small and very much caters to the local communities, community college as opposed to a university. But I have not alluded to that yet.
You get a lot more people to kill if it's you got places for them to stay. So
exactly. And I can't just be killing everybody off on campus.
No, of course not. Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Got a need for that.
Are you a fan of cozy mystery personally? Do you derive inspiration from that? And are there any that stick out to you that help mold your writing style?
I'm a huge fan of cozy mysteries, and I've been reading them for a really long time. One of the original kind of mothers of cozy mystery, the genre, is a woman named Lillian Jackson Braun, and she wrote a series called The Cat Who, and it was The Cat Who went to breakfast. Cat Who could read backwards. It's all of the titles started with the Cat Who. I started reading those probably, I don't know, early 2000s. And it's pretty much all I read anymore. I love that genre. It's very escapist. You are visiting these little towns where everyone's friendly for the most part. You do have your villains, obviously, but they're very much an escape. And I actually wrote Sinister Sort in 2015. And so I had probably started reading cozy mysteries almost exclusively, maybe around, I don't know, 2012-ish, been a couple of years then. Laura Childs writes a mystery series that's set at a tea shop in Charleston, South Carolina. And there's a series that's set in the Bake Shop series by Ellie Alexander that's set in Oregon. That's another one that I've just recently started that I really like. I don't know that I want to say that I was inspired by them because they're so much better. These are a really high quality professional. And I like to think mine's pretty good, but I don't know that I would put myself in that league at all.
I think you always have to have something to aspire to.
Yeah. And it's nice to read through those. When I started writing my own, I started as I was reading some of my favorite series, thinking about what is it that I like about this one, as opposed to some that I've read that I maybe didn't enjoy as much. And there are certain elements that stand out to me as being important as far as whether or not I'm going to really enjoy the book. And I've tried to incorporate those things. I love having a rescue animal of some kind. So she rescues a dog in Sinister Sort. And I like reading mystery series where they have a close-knit group of friends who help each other investigate and go on adventures together. I really enjoy that. So I've tried to incorporate that also. And I think setting is really important. All cozy mysteries also have a theme of some sort. So that was one thing that I settled on really early when I decided I wanted to write a cozy mystery, is there's a series for almost every theme you can imagine. And there's several series that are set at colleges, but there weren't any, and I don't know, there may be now, that's been so many years ago. There weren't any at that time that were set at a community college. So I thought that was unique. And it was something, obviously, that at that point I had been working at a community college for 6 or 7 years. And so I felt comfortable writing about that type of environment.
I don't know if you bring in people that you know in your story. Are you murdering anybody that you really don't like in person?
Oh, so no. And it's funny because I wrote this in 2015 and I edited it over the years. I would go back through it and reread it, edit it. And I don't know that I ever really intended to do anything with it. My husband was always like, oh, you need to publish that. You need to publish that. And I was always like, no, I don't. But I kept working on it. And I really didn't. I think I reread it maybe just one time before I published it this past fall.
What?
And I realized after I published it, so the main character, she comes to East Syracuse. She grew up there, but she's lived away for a number of years and she's returning. She comes to the community college, which is called Crane. It's Crane Community College. And she gets a job as the manager in the mailroom on campus. And there's a woman there named Hadley, and Hadley's worked in the mailroom for 5 years. She's been there for a while. And she had applied for the manager's position also. And obviously they chose Miranda over her, and she was furious. So she did everything she could as soon as Miranda got there to try to sabotage her, make her look bad, hiding packages that were supposed to be delivered and doing things like that. And later on, while I was working at a community college, I got a job where the person who was my assistant had applied for the job and didn't get it. And I probably need to just call him, because it occurred to me, oh my gosh, if he reads this book, I hope he doesn't think that I'm talking about him, because he was not like that at all. He could not have been more different than Hadley was. And yeah, oh no, I hope he doesn't think that's him. So yeah, I probably need to just call him or email him and say, hey, this was written in 2015. It is not, it's not you. It's not supposed to be you.
What is your writing process like? Do you plot and think when you're writing or before you sit down to write? Or do you maybe flesh out the characters and then explore that as you're writing? How would you describe your writing process?
I do plot out everything ahead of time. And I used to be in a writer's group, and one of our members, I have had many false starts with trying to write a book for decades, really, before I wrote this book. And when I was in that writer's group, one of the members, he passed away, and his wife brought us all of his writing books. And one of the books that he had was called Book in a Month. And it's like a little binder with a spiral bound notebook inside of it that kind of walks you through how to write a book. So it talks about character development and developing a plot. And there's a bunch of different like worksheets in there that you fill out to start developing your story. And I suppose you could do a lot of those things while you write, but I did a lot of those things before. And then, of course, you add to it as you go. But that was the thing that got me over the hump. So there were books that I had toiled away at when I was younger for years and could never get anywhere with. I couldn't figure out how to connect the dots from beginning to end. But when I used that book, I actually started writing Sinister Sort in October of 2015, and I finished it in January of 2016. So I was over a month, but I finished it. And that framework then carries over to books 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, as far as character development and also setting the scene. So it's East Syracuse has certain businesses that play an important role in different things, whether it's community service or the grocery store that's next door to where Miranda lives. And there's characters in there. But that book really helped me not only figure out how to plot things out or outline things ahead of time in such a way that it worked for me to be able to finish, but then also to make sure that I'm keeping consistent with my characters. And I don't want to say she's eating Fruit Loops in chapter 3 and in chapter 17 say that she hates cereal. Little things right. Like that. That in a lot of ways seem insignificant, but those are the things that readers look for a lot of times.
Yeah, they catch all those things, it seems like.
Yeah.
Have you heard any buzz on your book? What's the returns about? What did anybody that read it and said, hey, that's fantastic, or hey, what's this person like?
So I have 5 reviews on Amazon.
That's awesome, actually.
5 stars still, so knock on wood, maybe hopefully it will stay that way. And some of the reviews, I don't know who they are. And some of them are people that I know who they are. They are probably just saying nice things because they love me. But I've heard a lot of, oh, I read your book and I really liked it, but not much beyond that. And that's one thing that I'm working on right now is getting more reviews and getting more. It's always nice to have a quote from someone. You look at the cover of, I just read The Hunger by Alma Katsu, and on the front it says deeply disturbing from Stephen King. Yeah. And people will buy a book based on a little blurb like that. So I'm trying to convince people, hey, leave a review. Oh, you liked it. Oh, good. Leave a review. If they say I didn't care for it, I'll be like, don't worry about leaving a review.
Right. Now you're in an interesting spot because Sinister Sort is different than your first book, which is Doll Shark,
okay,
the novelization. When somebody reads your book and loves it, then they're usually like, oh, that's awesome. What else do you have? So mm-hmm. Do you say I have Doll Shark, or do you tell them about the next one coming out?
If people read Sinister Sort and liked it, I usually tell them about Required Corpse.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so I usually tell them about that. Doll Shark is a very different type of book, and it certainly would appeal probably to a very different type of audience. And And I am torn at this point between, I do have another novelization that is basically finished. I'm just waiting on them to be ready to move forward with it. And I do want to keep doing those, but then it's the wrestling match of which should take priority. The novelizations obviously are much easier because I don't have to come up with the story. I do a lot of embellishment, but the main story obviously already exists in the movie itself. And it's interesting. I listened to, you guys had John Oak Dalton on.
Sure.
I think that was maybe over the summer. And he works with Polonia Brothers Entertainment, and that's who I do my novelizations from. And also, John Oak Dalton, and I've heard him say this in at least one other interview, he describes one of his movies as the movie that nobody has ever seen. It's called Razor Teeth, and it is one of my absolute favorite movies. Oh. John, if you're listening, I have seen Razor Teeth, and I love it. Yeah, and that's actually, it was my inroads to doing the novelizations, because I love Razor Teeth so much that I dragged my husband all the way to Pennsylvania so that I could go to the park where it was filmed. And while we were there, we met Mark Polonia of Polonia Brothers Entertainment. And that's how I got started on doing the novelizations for him. So
that's awesome. I'm going to have to check that movie out now.
Oh, look, it's super fun. It's on Prime. At least I think it still is. It was on and then it disappeared for a while. And when it came back, I bought it so that I wouldn't ever lose access to it. And it's also on a collection called, I think, Dawn of the Animals, Day of the Animals through SRS Cinema. And that has both Razor Teeth and Peter Rottentail. And right. He mentioned that too, that it's considered one of the worst, quote, horror movies ever made. Also, love that movie. So those are both on a triple feature together.
I've not read Sinister Sword, but I have been reading Doll Shark, and it's pretty cool. I like how you have there's a family situation going on in Doll Shark, and mm-hmm. I think you do a good job with that. And I've not seen the movie, but I've seen a couple other movies by Polonia, and I've seen John Oak Dalton, a couple of his films, which I think it's awesome. I love his dialogue, but I can't wait to see the movie because I'm really enjoying the book and how things are playing out in it. So it's a lot of fun. So how did you just say, hey, I'm a fan of yours, Mark. Can I do a novelization? How did that all come about?
I actually wrote part of one first and sent it to him. I'm pretty sure this is several years ago. This is about 3 years ago. I think I wrote part of it and sent it to him first. And that's the one that I'm waiting on. I wrote part of it and he said, hey, they're going to be re-releasing that movie. So maybe we can package this with their re-release. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. And I think I went through and finished like a first draft and then I sat on it because I wasn't sure when all of that was going to happen. And obviously several years down the road, it still hasn't happened. But after that, let's see, I think it was this past spring, I think it was May, they had another novelization come out by a different author. And I was like, they stole my idea. And so I reached out to that production company. They also did Doll Shark. And I said, hey, I want to do one. And I sent them what I had done before. Hey, if you want to read my work, here's one that I've done that's still in rough draft. And so he let me pick one and I picked Doll Shark. So, yeah. And I've talked to him about doing another one, but not haven't selected a film yet. The novel of it, a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, it's a fun story. I will say this: there's a lot of heart in their movies. Yeah. What they lack in budget, there's a lot of heart and fun in these films, and that's what I really like a lot. And when you read a book, you can have 100 sharks or whatever you want. The Doll Shark can be perfect. I was picturing the whole yanking the shark's tooth out is the guy's father, and I'm picturing this. I love that part of it. I love movies, of course, too, but it's awesome, too, to read this because it really becomes anything you want it to, which I found that very fun.
Yeah.
I'm a big horror fan. This is right down my alley.
It's funny because I don't really like scary movies.
Really?
But I absolutely love like everything the Polonia Brothers Entertainment has done. It's just awesome.
I really love that they have a very dedicated crew and group of people that they make these films with and some amazing talented people, which I'm just blown away. I think John Oak Dalton is a super talented guy. And I was so glad that he came on our show.
He's a genius.
Oh, he's so good.
As a writer creating a novelization, I might have read one novelization in my lifetime. So I'm new to the concept also, but when you're writing something like that, do you feel like as a writer, you're able to put in your own writing style and voice, or do you feel constricted sometimes because you want it to be true to the artistic vision of the movie, or is it a balance? Or
that's a good question. I think it's a balance. One thing that I think that Mark Polonia and John Polonia, when he was making movies too, and John Oak Dalton with the scripts that he writes, they're deceptively deep. When you watch them, most of them are around 70 minutes. And when you watch them just once through, they're fun movies, but I don't get really like the depth of the movies and the talent of the actors and actresses. But when I watch them to do the novelizations, even the things that I'm writing that aren't in the movie, I feel like I'm not really making that stuff up. I feel like I'm just telling the story, even when it's background stuff. And the novelization he told me I can't say anything about it. Otherwise, I'd tell you which movie it was. But it's one that it's maybe not even 70 minutes. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 minutes. But just the way that they show things and the way the actors portray their characters, I don't know. And maybe it's just me because I love the movies so much. I feel like I know who this person is, if that makes sense. And I feel like there's one character who goes fishing. His name's Todd Carpenter, and he is famous for all of these different movies. They always show him fishing. And it's like when they show him on the screen, like I know who that guy is, and I know why he's there fishing. He's there because he got into an argument with his wife and he was like, forget it, I'm going fishing. Or just they put a lot, like Patrick said, they put a lot of heart into the movies. And I feel as I'm watching them and when I'm doing a novelization, it's 2 and 3 seconds at a time to catch all the dialogue and catch every look that somebody's giving to somebody else and every movement. Are they reaching for something? Or when you're watching it like that, there's so much depth to a lot of those movies that I don't feel like I have to do a whole lot. I just have to write it out and put it on paper.
I think you alluded to that. My next question is, what's that process like? Do you just constantly breaking it down into small scenes? Do you watch the movie a couple times and take notes? Or
I've seen every Polonia Brothers movie a couple times, Lawrence.
That's awesome.
So I usually, like with Doll Shark, that was crowdfunded through Indiegogo. They use Indiegogo to fund some of their movies. I had participated in that. And if you watch the movie, there's a point where, it's probably maybe 3/4 of the way through the movie where a guy comes over to their house and he opens up the refrigerator door and my name is on a sticky note on the refrigerator door. Nice. So yeah, I was already very familiar with the movie and really liked the movie, which is why I picked it. So if I hadn't seen it or if it was one I hadn't seen very many times, I definitely would want to watch it a couple of times before I got started. And then, yeah, I tend to just go second by second. And I tend to do the main overview first, get the dialogue down, get the characters down, kind of separate things into chapters based on changes in scene and stuff like that. And then I'll go back through and add some more of the background and the motivations and things that aren't shown on screen.
That's awesome. That's very fascinating.
When you're done, you are like, completely, this is the best movie ever. You think of it, watching something like that and watching it multiple times, you think you would get tired of it. And I just don't. Maybe with other movies I would, but I'll still just queue up one of those movies just if I'm making dinner or whatever, just because I just love them so much.
That's awesome. I imagine that definitely gives you a new perspective to the movie too after doing that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Have you reviewed any of the Polonium movies?
Meaning?
Have you went on to a site and reviewed them? Like on Amazon, you can do reviews. Have you ever done that?
I have with a lot of them. Yeah. Yeah. And as a newly self-published author, I see now the value in that, like how important it is for independent authors and independent movie makers for people to go into Amazon and go into Goodreads and go into wherever else and leave a review. And the funny thing is, for me, and this is probably bad. For me with movies, I really won't watch a movie that has more than like maybe 3 stars. The lower the number of stars, the better for me with a movie. So I'll go in there and I'll be like, Doll Shark, 1 star. This movie is awesome. Because I don't know, and I probably shouldn't do that, but I know that a lot of people like me who really enjoy the fun micro budget movies, like that's what we're looking for. And hopefully my like all caps awesome or whatever, hopefully my subject line makes it very clear that this is a positive review, and I'm just not wanting it to go up into the 4-star range where somebody like me will be like, nope, I'm not interested in seeing that.
And then people are like, why did they give it this? That's how I am with a lot of Hollywood movies. I'm just like, why in the world is this out right now?
Yeah.
You know, you're very right about reviews. And I would tell anybody listening to this podcast, go over to Spotify, go over to Apple Reviews and review True Fiction, because it really helps people. And you can wait till after this podcast is over, though, just FYI, because we still are in the middle of talking to Lena. So now, have you ever acted in one of the Polonium movies?
I actually have. So I did voiceovers for Motorboat and Yule Log. And I think it was maybe just those two. And I actually am on camera in Cocaine Shark. But that's okay. The only one that you can actually see my face. And in Motorboat, they named a character after me. So I just have a voiceover, but there is a character in Motorboat whose name is Lena. So that's fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the Yule Log, because the description is a lot like the one that came out. And I don't know, have you ever seen the one for Adult Swim Yule Log?
Uh-uh.
Okay. And the description is like, dead on. So I didn't know if they took his script and did something with it further. I don't know, but it was very interesting when I was reading the blurbs about it. Just didn't know if you knew anything about that.
I don't. And I think Yule Log was written by Mark and his son Anthony. Mark writes most of his own movies. For the most part, he's written most of he had a twin brother named John. John passed away, I think, in 2009. John
that
wrote,
long ago. Okay.
Yeah. Well, been almost 14 years or almost 15 years. John did a lot of the writing. And then for a while too, it was script by Mark, story by John. And Mark's done a lot. John Oak Dalton has written quite a few for them. And then there's a couple of people who have written a few recently. Feeders 3 was written by someone else. But Mark's son, Anthony, he's making movies now too. I don't know how much of his work is under the Polonia Brothers umbrella. He does his own type of movies, but he's a brilliant guy too.
You are like probably one of the best experts on Polonia Brothers movies. Been watching him so much.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever thought about doing a script?
I did a script for a Mothman movie because I love Mothman. And I think that's one of the few cryptozoological creatures that they have not made a movie about. But yeah, I don't think they were real interested. I don't think they were real interested in it. It needs some work. I just did a kind of a first draft of it. And funny, as I was writing it, I had in my mind, I know exactly who I want to play each character. I know exactly where I want each scene to be filmed. They're really good about, or maybe bad about, I don't know, depending on how you take that, but they reuse, and it was like, oh, that scene from such and such would fit perfectly in here for just a background or showing a kill scene or something like that.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm completely obsessed. And when we went to Wellsboro, my husband was like, all right, you got to tone it down. Because I would just see places, oh my gosh, Part of Camp Blood 3 was filmed here. Oh my gosh, that's the cabin from Among Us. I probably made a few scenes here and there, but but it was awesome. And I got to meet Mark there and Anthony. I met Anthony first, and then I got to meet Ken Van Sant, who's in a bunch of their movies. I got to meet Mark and his wife, Maria, and just the nicest people on earth. Yeah, it was very exciting. And it solidified, I'm a fan for life. They could murder people in real life and I would be like, whatever, they're cool.
Do you feel like those movies have inspired you? The one thing that I love about movies like that is that it really shows me that it's not about the money that you throw at a movie. It's about the time and the love that you put into it. Has that inspired you as well to do your work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And in their movies, there's one movie, and I'm trying to think of which one it is, where it's this spaceship, and it's obviously a Gatorade bottle that's been spray painted. But I know for a lot of people, they'd be like, oh, that's dumb or whatever. But I think that's brilliant. I think people who are that creative, like, that's something really special. And if you can just watch the movie for what it is. It doesn't matter whether it's a Gatorade bottle or whether it's a $2 million special effect, if the story's good. And also, too, I think they put into perspective, not everybody, for the writing world, not everybody can be a James Patterson or a Stephen King. But if there's a handful of people out there who really enjoy your work, then that makes it worth the time and energy that goes into creating it. It's not about becoming rich and famous. It's about creating something that other people can enjoy. And that's, Mark Polonia has been making movies for probably 40 years now, and he still has a day job. He makes movies because he's passionate about making movies. And I think it really shows. And he's not a household name, maybe, but there are households that in which his name is uttered daily, mine being one of them. So I think that's been definitely a big inspiration. And too, I think if I hadn't done Doll Shark and published that, I don't know that I would have published Sinister Sword. That gave me the push to, because I had a contract. So it gave me the push I needed to figure out, okay, I've got this book. I need a cover for it. How am I don't really know any artists. So I did the cover myself, for better or for worse, I did the cover myself. And so once I figured that out, it's like, okay, this isn't so hard. And then getting it onto Amazon, Kindle format, paperback format, hardback format, you have to have a different cover layout for each one. The inside, the content has to be different for the different versions. Getting through that process, It like demystified the process for me. So now when I went to do Sinister Sword, it's okay. I know exactly what I need to do for the cover. I know exactly what I need to do to get it on Amazon, to get it out there. And now I feel like, okay, there's nothing holding me back. I sat on Sinister Sword for almost 8 years and I won't do that again.
Perfect. That's awesome. we're getting short on time. I do want to ask you, the artistic part is what we love to do. I love to talk to creative people. If I could just talk to creative people, that would be fine. But it's not all about that. It's also about editing, and it's also about marketing this. That's the tough part for me. How do you deal with that? How does that work for you?
I find that putting my head in the sand just works great. That's one thing that I'm still trying to figure out, especially the marketing side. Editing is a little bit easier to, I don't know. Editing, I feel like I have people I know that I can go to for help that I know will be good resources for that. The marketing, I don't know. I've been posting on social media, and I've been pursuing marketing in terms of that end of things. I've explored a little bit. There's a lot of different places where you can post an ad or hit up some organization, maybe has a mailing list of people who are fans of similar types of things. And I haven't done any of that sort of thing yet because you got to pay.
Yeah.
And I'm not really at the point of wanting to do that yet. But yeah, you're right, because you could have the best thing in the world, but if nobody knows it's there, then nobody's going to watch or listen or read. And yeah, so how do you let people know? And I think a lot of that maybe is organic, where you just, that's the other thing too. Like, I posted on my Facebook, oh, hey, I've got my book is available now. But then you have to remember that people won't necessarily see it. Even people that are friends with you on Facebook that follow you, because there's so much on there. So there's something to be said for just consistency. Even if you're only doing one or two things, just consistently reminding people, asking people to share. That's the very grassroots way of growing. But it's also inexpensive, which is important too.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think too, once you have more books out, like more of the community college series, I think that will grow.
There's a lot of truth to that. And a lot of things that I've read have said, if you're doing a series and you only have one book done, don't bother. Wait until you have at least two or three done. And I guess that probably depends on how many. If you're doing a trilogy, you may not want to wait until book three to market it. You probably would want to do that earlier. But yeah, that's another reason why I haven't pursued a whole lot of the more professional marketing campaigns, because with just one book, it's not really enough. And also too, being spread between movie novelizations and cozy mysteries, what do you promote and how do you do it in such a way that you're hitting the right audience with the right product?
Absolutely. And when you figure that out, tell me. That's a tough one. Lena, we've taken up far too much of your time tonight, but I really appreciate you coming on. This has been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved it. This is awesome.
Oh, this has been so great. And let us know when the next book comes out. Maybe we can talk again. That'd be a lot of fun. Now, both these books are on Amazon. Is that correct?
They're both on Amazon. They're available Kindle paperback, hardback, and they're also available on Kindle Unlimited. So anybody who has Kindle Unlimited can read them for free.
That's very nice. Very good. Lena, you have a great night. It was a blast talking to you.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Thank you, Marshall. It was nice talking to you guys.
Have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative. You're too late.